Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, it's been nearly 50 years since the first Surgeon General's report on tobacco was released, warning of the dangers of cigarette smoking. With more than 7,000 chemicals and compounds released in cigarette smoke, including hundreds that are toxic and at least 70 of which are known to cause cancer, cigarette smoke is a highly potent environmental toxin, one that has been definitively linked to physical changes that lead to cancer, heart attacks, lung disease, and many other serious illnesses, including damage to the reproductive systems of both men and women. Over the last 40 years, while we've had major success in cutting down on tobacco use in this country, there are still about 20% of Americans who smoke, and it's the leading cause of preventable death in the United States, contributing to 440,000 premature deaths per year. And in addition to the dangers of smoking, much has been written and proven about the dangers to non-smokers of exposure to so-called secondhand smoke, that is, inhaling other people's smoke. Well, now, some new evidence has underscored the dangers of tobacco. The release of the newest Surgeon General's report offers dramatic proof that smoking and exposure to secondhand smoke cause immediate harm to the body, even from one cigarette. And a new study in the Journal of Pediatrics has alerted us to the dangers of what they term third-hand smoke, an otherwise overlooked source for these carcinogens, which are especially toxic to infants and children. Added together, all these findings suggest that there is no such thing as a safe cigarette, and that cigarettes and smoking pose a significant public health hazard. Joining us to explore all of this as part of our quarterly series on public health today is Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Bakke.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Well, we've known for some time that smoking itself and even secondhand smoke can cause harm. I was really surprised to hear about the newest Surgeon General's report. What do you make of that, that one cigarette can actually cause this kind of damage?
Well, what it really underscores the seriousness of people smoking, the fact that we used to think that someone needed to smoke for a while before they had harmful effects. Now we know as soon as a teenager may take one cigarette, they're already having damage, and that's very significant and a cause for alarm.
Yeah, I mean, we used to think that people, even who were social smokers, who would pick up a cigarette at a party, were safe, so to speak. I mean, they could smoke and not smoke, assuming they weren't addicted. But it looks like there's really no safe level of cigarette.
That's true, smoking. And I think for those people out there who consider themselves social smokers, they need to consider the fact that they are harming their body, and they could potentially have some of these diseases we talk about, heart disease, cancer, long-term down the road where they thought maybe they were immune to it.
Now, I was really shocked when I read the study that even a brief exposure to tobacco can trigger acute cardiac events and even potential sudden death. I mean, I was totally floored.
Yes, I think even exposure, we now know, even exposure to secondhand smoke can cause significant heart disease. There was a study done in Montana where they passed a law that there was no secondhand smoke in restaurants and bars and found a significant decrease in heart attacks in that community after they did it. So we do know that there's harmful effects.
You know, the belief is that these newer cigarettes, and I think this is, you know, attributable to the marketing tactics of the large tobacco companies, but they're suggesting that the newer cigarettes have better filters. But in fact, I think the flavor additives and these filter ventilations have actually made them more efficient in delivering the nicotine to the brain and thereby making them more addictive. So
yes,
they're not any better.
The tobacco companies are very smart in what they do. And for a long time, they promoted low-tar and nicotine cigarettes. What they didn't tell you is that the vents are right at the place where you put your fingers. So you think you're getting a low-tar nicotine cigarette, but you're actually blocking the vent, so you're getting as much nicotine or more. And what they also do is they put different amounts of nicotine in different cigarettes in a pack. So it promotes the addiction.
That's amazing. I had no idea. See, I'm learning something new every minute. You know, the other thing that struck me when I was kind of preparing and reading about this, the amount of toxins that are in smoke. I mean, things like cyanide, which obviously can make you, it binds to the hemoglobin and the oxygen and makes you unable to breathe.
There are over 70 cancer-causing chemicals and over 7,000 chemicals in cigarettes. And many of them are toxic. And something like arsenic, which is known to kill and reduce oxygen, benzene, which is a cancer-causing agent, and some of things called nitrosamines, which we find, which people always know happen when you char something on a charcoal grill,
mm-hmm.
Are in cigarettes, and people don't really realize this.
I was shocked to hear that polonium-210, which was the radioactive carcinogen that was used to kill that Soviet spy in 2006, is also one of the byproducts of cigarette smoke. I mean, I was horrified.
Yes, it's amazing. If you look at the list, you'd be horrified.
Well, how do the toxins actually do their dirty work? What kind of changes do they actually affect in the body?
Well, they're all different. You know, as you talked about, some of them actually immediately cause problems with your heart vessels. Some of them cause damage to DNA inside cells, and so that's where you get the cancer-causing agents. And some of them can actually, like nicotine, immediately triggers a response in your brain, which causes you to become addicted. So it really depends on the chemical, but they all work in different ways.
You know, it's clear now, obviously, from all of this, that both smoking and secondhand smoke present devastating health implications. But what about this new concept, third-hand smoke? I mean, first of all, tell us more about that. What is it exactly?
Well, this is actually something I've been discussing with my patients for years, just didn't have a name for it. And what it is, you know, after a person smokes, those particles stay in the air for a long period of time and they eventually settle down. So if it's in a room, it could be on the curtains, on the carpeting. If it's in a car, it could be on the seats, on the floor. But they also are gases, and so eventually they will come back into the air. And you may not even smell smoke in the room, but you're inhaling all of these cancer-causing and harmful chemicals.
And it sounds like they layer on. In other words, if you're in the room of someone who's a smoker, that you have one layer is laid down, and then the next time they light up, another layer is laid down. So there's almost a cumulative effect on these.
Correct. And also, they're so small that even if you vacuumed the rug, you're not going to get everything out or cleaned the couch. And so what's happening is that, particularly for children, because they're so small, and they, a lot of times, toddlers are crawling around, and they're getting a much higher dose than adults will be. And it's causing additional problems in those children.
And
so,
in addition, as you know, as a pediatrician, the brain is developing in young children and infants, obviously, so they're more susceptible, I would think, to those kinds
of
toxins.
They are. And this is something that parents just need to be concerned about. You should never, if you smoke, you should never smoke in a home, never smoke in your car.
So the notion that people have, excuse me, typical, that if I'm a smoker, I'll go in the kitchen, I'll put on a fan, an exhaust fan, and my kids will be in the family room, it won't harm them, is not really true.
No, particularly because you have a ventilation, you have an air conditioning or heating ventilation system, so all of those chemicals are going through the system and are landing in the other room, even though the children there or the person there may not be smelling it. And they're inhaling it. So they're getting those harmful chemicals. And
but even,
it's staying on the couches and staying in places.
But it even is on their clothing. I mean, how many times have you been in an elevator when someone who's just gone out for a smoke break comes in and you smell it so intensely on their clothing? So if a mom is holding a baby and she's just had a cigarette, even if away from the child, she's got those toxins on her clothing.
Yes, and one of the things I've always recommended to my parents who smoke is that use what we call a smoking jacket or something you can put on top of your clothes that you just use when you go outside to smoke, and leave it, you know, far away from any place that anyone can inhale it, and then you won't get as much on your clothing.
I was also shocked to read that they have found that rat studies have suggested that tobacco toxin exposure is the leading potential cause of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. I'd never heard that before.
Yes, we're thinking that there's some modification to the brain that these children from inhaling this tobacco smoke, so that may be making these children susceptible to SIDS. We don't really know the mechanism yet, but it is concerning. That's why I always tell parents to smoke outside the home.
Very frightening, very frightening. Or more importantly, to quit, which is what I'd like to get to now. So this is a huge public health issue. I mean, it's not just affecting the smokers. It's affecting people who might be in their environment while they're smoking, but then anybody who might be in their environment when they're not smoking, like in a hotel where they may have been, or a conference room, or an office. So it's really obviously something very, very important from a public health standpoint. So what should we be doing? What can governments or the public do?
Well, first of all, we need to make sure across this country that we have smoke-free laws in all states. We currently don't have that. In New York State, we're very fortunate. We do have that for most public places. But we need to consider even other things like, you know, should people be smoking in their cars? We need to be educating more, like this program, letting people know what the harmful effects are so they can make changes. We need to do a better job of preventing children from starting to smoke, because we know that if you start to smoke before the age of 18, you're more likely to continue smoking as an adult. So those are the major things that we can do. Certainly the new warning labels on cigarette packages, which are going to be more graphic with the harm, what are the causes of smoking, will hopefully reduce people's smoking.
Right. I read that they're going to actually have very graphic images like coffins with someone in it saying smoking can kill you. I mean, they're really kind of no holds barred. They're really taking on the very harmful effects of smoking in their packaging and requiring cigarette companies to have 50% of the package covered with these kinds of images. One hopes that'll make a difference. I mean, it's said clearly on cigarette packages for many years now, smoking can be hazardous to your health. I don't know that it's actually dissuaded people, though.
But it's always been very small letters and in places that people don't look. So this will be a little more graphic. But clearly, we need more funding to be able to target young people to really prevent them from smoking, not only adolescents, but also young adults.
You know, I read that, unfortunately, that the states have slashed these funds in the last 3 years, and they're now at the lowest level since 1999 when they first received the funds from the settlements from the tobacco industry suits that took place, that they're collecting something like $25 billion in these funds from the settlements and taxes, but are only spending 2% of that on programs for kids and to help smokers quit.
Yes, the majority of the money is not going to reduce tobacco use, which is really unfortunate. We need to do a better job of getting that money back. But certainly, I think as we move forward, you know, the education piece, enforcing the laws that we do have, trying to make sure that we have children not starting to smoke is really where we need to be. And also parents understanding that any place they smoke, their children are going to get exposed. And so they really need to either try to quit and use the quit lines that we have available in New York State or other places, but also to make sure that they don't smoke in places where children would naturally go, like cars and homes.
You know, we also offer, I know here through Upstate offers these, through HealthLink, the free smoking cessation programs. And that seems to be a very, very important element of trying to get the public to quit.
Yes, I think, you know, it's important that we have this available and we have it free. People need to know that it's available to them. And then they also need to work not only in that program with their physician, because a lot of times you need nicotine replacement products to help you stop. It's such an addictive substance.
Yeah, I wasn't Upstate the first SUNY school to actually be tobacco free, and currently I know the whole Upstate campus is tobacco free.
Yes, yes, it was the first SUNY school, and it's also the first hospital in this region to be totally tobacco free.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference. As a matter of fact, a little while ago we interviewed the fellow who's the CEO of Cleveland Clinic, and I was shocked to hear his stance is he does not hire anyone who smokes. So, I mean, he insists on them going to smoking cessation or what have you. So let's hope these kinds of efforts will make a difference. And I want to thank you, Dr. Donna Bakke, Associate Professor and Chair of Public Health and Preventive Medicine at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much for joining us today. That was really great insight, and hopefully we'll make a difference with this information. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.